A few years ago, we were sitting around the Thanksgiving table, food before us, maybe some of it was in us, and the topic of conversation struck up about our motivations. Were we motivated by the past, the present, or the future? And so first the question was thrown out there, and we all had to sit there like looking at our mashed potatoes, wondering what to really think of this. And one person at the table said, "I am motivated by the future. What happens now, I know, impacts tomorrow and a week from now and years from now. And I am motivated to do things in the now that are going to impact and better the future. I am so future motivated." Someone else at the table, they said, "No, I'm present motivated. I'm motivated by what's happening right here, right now. How do I make this experience the best for everybody involved? What can I do to either set the stage or create a space so that people feel connected, so that people feel enlightened by this experience, so that people can walk away always knowing this experience mattered?" And then some of us at the table, me and only one other person at the table, said, "No, we are past motivated." And there's no right or wrong, but let me explain past motivated. I am motivated by the things that have gone on in my life and that do go on in the lives of other people. Past experiences, rituals and traditions and stories, they all speak to me and influence what I do in the present. And so I'm very aware of these patterns that God has set up in my life and how they affect everything I do right here, right now, as this living, breathing being in front of you. The past is what motivates me. Yes, sure, I care about the future. Yes, I care about this moment. But I really pay attention to what happened in the past. My friends who are present motivated, they care about what happens, or they're focused on what happens right now. Yes, they care about the past. Yes, they care about the future. But they care about most what happens right now. And my future motivated friends, they're focused. They're focused on what's coming and what God or what they can do in the now so that good things could come about in the future. This morning we read about the Exodus story. When God intervened presently, right where the Israelites were, to redeem their past, to make good use of even their present moments, and to give them a hope for the future. God is not motivated by one or the other. He's motivated by all three. And we see it all collide in this Exodus story. I've invited a friend of mine, senior in high school, Luke Hedberg, to come and read the scripture for you this morning. Listen with ears that are ready to remember.
Exodus 12:29 through 42. At midnight, the Lord struck down all the firstborn in Egypt, from the firstborn of Pharaoh, who sat on the throne, to the firstborn of the prisoner, who was in the dungeon, and the firstborn of all the livestock as well. Pharaoh and all his officials and all the Egyptians got up during the night, and there was loud wailing in Egypt, for there was not a house without someone dead. During the night, Pharaoh summoned Moses and Aaron and said, "Up, leave my people, you and the Israelites. Go worship the Lord as you have requested. Take your flocks and herds as you have said, and go, and also bless me." The Egyptians urged the people to hurry and leave the country, for otherwise, they said, "We will all die." So the people took their dough before the yeast was added and carried it on their shoulders in kneading troughs wrapped in clothing. The Israelites did as Moses instructed and asked the Egyptians for articles of silver and gold and for clothing. The Lord had made the Egyptians favorably disposed towards the people, and they gave them what they asked for. So they plundered the Egyptians. The Israelites journeyed from Ramesses to Succoth. There were about 600,000 men on foot, besides women and children. Many other people went up with them, and also large droves of livestock, both flocks and herds. With the dough the Israelites had brought from Egypt, they baked loaves of unleavened bread, and the dough was without yeast, because they had been driven out of Egypt and did not have time to prepare food for themselves. Now the length of time the Israelite people lived in Egypt was 430 years. At the end of the 430 years, to the very day, all the Lord's divisions left Egypt. Because the Lord kept vigil that night to bring them out of Egypt, on this night all the Israelites are to keep vigil to honor the Lord for generations to come. This is the word of the Lord.
Thanks be to God. Luke, thank you. Let's set up the story a little bit. There's a lot of details here. There's a lot of things that seem to not matter, but they're specific. See, here's what happens. God permits the last plague to occur on all of the Egyptian land. And it is very important to note that this last plague was not fun for God. This last plague was his last resort. You see, he tried gnats and hail and death of livestock and what else? Boils. God tried boils, okay? He tried everything else but to take someone's life. And Pharaoh and his officials, they didn't listen. And so God said, this is my last resort. And so that plague swept through Egypt. And here's what God did. God provided a way for the people to be spared. And this was not just for the Israelites. Moses told the Israelites, but it could have been for anyone in that community. He said, I want you to follow these instructions very specifically, all right? And if you do, the destroyer, as it says in the text, the destroyer will not enter the house. It won't strike anyone down. So the people put blood on the doorposts. And those inside the home, they were dressed and ready for the moment that God would tell them to go. They were patient and they were exacting in how they followed these instructions. And because of that blood on the doorpost, God committed himself to the people inside. You see, that sign of the blood was a sign of life. Literally, the lifeblood of an animal being shed so that the people inside would have their lives preserved. This blood, this life, these things may sound familiar to those who are acquainted with Jesus. And then after the destroyer left Egypt, Pharaoh calls Aaron and Moses to him, and he gives them these series of demands. He's very specific. He says, up, leave, go, worship, take your possessions, go to your God. Oh, then also, just one more thing, please bless me. This guy's scared. Can you hear it in his voice? Like, get, go, go, go. You see, Pharaoh senses that his reign of power is quickly crumbling. And even his very life is at stake. It's on the line. And so at the prospect of losing all that he knows, all that he has, all that is precious to him, he is willing to release anything in order to not let those things be a threat. The rest of the Egyptians, they follow suit. They quicken the hastening of the Israelites getting out of Egypt. They are like, here, take this, take my gold, take my silver, go, quickly. They're like, kicking them, go, get out of here. We don't want you anymore. They're afraid. We can wonder how God is turning the tables here, giving slaves who had no resources or capital a liberation that included being liberated from financial poverty. Interesting how God works. And the text says that 600,000 men, along with women and children, including non-Israelite people who were also bound in slavery, they left. They exited. That number, 600,000 men, it's a terrible number because really, scholars think about 2 million people left Egypt that night. 2 million God directed out of Egypt. I can't get my two kids out of the door at the same time, and they're small. I could carry them. God got 2 million people out of Egypt. It was a stealthy plan organized by a very thoughtful and strategic God. And all the Israelites had to do in order to leave was obey. They had to obey in the present, and then God invites them to obey in the future. You see, God prepares the Israelites for the future by asking them to mark this day and keep vigil to honor God. Because Israel's keeping remembers God's keeping. And that's just it. You see, the Exodus is about remembering. Remembering is bringing an awareness of someone or something that happened in the past. We are good at remembering. God intervened to rescue his people from present oppression, but also to redeem the past years of suffering, and then to change the story for generations to come. And he doesn't want his people to forget. So he made a holiday. You see, holidays are a means of remembering, right? That's why we have holidays. They usually gather us together. There's food, there's festive clothing, sometimes ugly sweaters. And if you've walked into Hobby Lobby, you can tell that craft stores make a haul on us celebrating holidays because we need the wrapping paper and the funky, really ugly Santa Claus. We need all of it in order to remember Jesus' birth. God initiates this holiday, this Passover holiday, so that the people would remember. Because God wanted the people to remember what he had done for them. And because it was part of their relationship to him. It's like celebrating an anniversary. God wanted the people to recall with clarity what happened that day, that evening, when the relationship status between God and the Israelites went widely public. There wasn't even one inhabitant in Egypt who would ever doubt the union that God had with his people. And God gave specific instructions about the Passover and the Exodus to protect the people in the present, to literally get them out. They were ready. Their clothes were on. They had funny shoes. They ate funny bread. They never had unleavened bread. They ate their bread funny so that they could get out. They were ready. And those provisions and instructions were there for a very specific purpose. It wasn't a gussied-up holiday, this very first Passover. There was no fine wine. There were not sparkles. Nobody was in a nice dress. The bread was bland. The meat was roasted, but there were no leftovers. You know that good Thanksgiving sandwich? You know, you have Saturday, maybe Friday, maybe the next Friday. There was none of that. The Israelites could not have any of that. They just had the unleavened bread that tasted unleavened. And as far as decorations would go, it was this: blood on the doorposts. That's it. The rest of their life, all their possessions, everything that mattered to them had to be left in Egypt, had to be left with their captive life. These instructions that God gives, they served as provision for the now, to get them out of Egypt, but they also served as memory triggers for the future. It's as though through these events, God's instructions of these events, past, present, and future, all come colliding into one hallowed night, because God is liberating the past, and he's providing for the present, and he is setting up a pattern for the future. God is motivated to do what is righteous by redeeming what was, by righting right then, and by reminding of what was to come. You know, the Exodus event is mentioned 167 times in the Bible, and a handful of these refer to the actual event. Yes, yes, yes. But the rest, God is helping his people remember. He says over and over and over again in Scripture, I was the one who brought you out of Egypt. I delivered you from the Egyptians. I provided a way for you. 167 times. It was me, God said, nobody else. Me, 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 me. And why don't we remember? We don't remember. You see, I did a little research on memory because science is fun. Tell your kids that. Did you know that memory is both retrospective and prospective? Retrospective, remembering the past, and prospective, is intending for the future. We all know retrospective memory. Oh, remember the time? Or, oh, wasn't it so great when we did this, right? But prospective memory, what does that even mean? You do this all the time, though. You're getting ready to send an email. Oh, I need to remember to attach a file to an email. Or, oh, yeah, I need to remember to pick up a gallon of milk on the way home. Okay, I got to remember that. This is prospective memory. It aims you for the future. It allows you to accomplish something or prepares you to accomplish something in the future that you couldn't in the present. Memory serves as much a way to recall the past as it does to aim for the future. And we know that we can get a gallon of milk from the store, we pray, or attach files to an email if technology is kind to us, because our retrospective memory serves our prospective memory. And God works within human memory to bring about his purposes. Do you see what he's doing? He's so good. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where we lie on his timetable. He will use every resource, especially our memory, to establish and pattern a relationship with us. So this Exodus story serves our retrospective memory and our prospective memory, and it serves us because of Jesus. When we say yes, when we say yes to Jesus, the Exodus story becomes our story. It's not just the Israelite story. It's not just the Jews' story. We hear the story of God's liberation because of the grace of Jesus, and we get to call that story our own, and we get to claim the truth that God releases captive things. This serves our retrospective memory and our prospective memory. Because if he did it then, surely he will do it again and again and again. At some point in our lives, we have lived, or we can anticipate living, an Exodus event. A time when God intervened and invited us to leave behind all we knew all too well. And it changes the course of our history and our future. God works in our Exodus events to redeem our past, to provide in our present, and to give us hope for the future. Perhaps you can recall a time in your life where you had an awareness of God's presence and activity in your life, a time where you saw the mighty hand of God move you, a time when you walked out of a seriously dark and oppressive space and you experienced liberation. As much as you can, right now, I want you to remember the sights, the sounds, the people involved, the emotions that you had, the questions that you had. Draw as much of that back into this present moment as you can. Maybe there's a word or a picture that's coming to you that sums up that experience in only a way that you would know. I want you to try and capture that and write it down with whatever sort of writing utensil or anything you have available. Take your phone out. Type it into notes. Capture that so that you don't forget, and hold on to it for just a moment. The Exodus is about remembering, and the Exodus is about remembering, becoming members again. Because the Passover reminded people who they belonged to. It seems like such a small thing in the text, but in the bigger story, we cannot overlook verse 38. If you're there, put your finger on it and take a look. The text says that many other people went up out of Egypt with the Israelites. Many other people. These were not people of Israel. They were outsiders. And God, when he gave instructions about the Passover, he gave instructions to the Israelite people. And if we keep reading in chapter 12, we hear about these instructions and how specific they were. But If you wanted in on the celebration, if an outsider wanted in on what was going on, they had an option. Text says that members of the community could join into the celebration if they participated in an opting in. The foreigner and the slave were given access to the community and were given access to celebrating Passover if they wanted to become members. You see, the Exodus was a remembering event that was honored by the Passover festival. And we like to think that God put strict parameters around the Passover to keep people out. But actually, the exact opposite is intended. The Exodus event membered outsiders into God's family. And God works by way of covenants. These are divine contracts which require an agreement on the human side, because God is always seeking to covenant to relationship with us. We just have to agree to let it happen. These agreements, these covenants, they required sacrifice. It required change, but it meant that we could participate. We could belong. We could story share with a community. And God did this by way of circumcision. And so that circumcision for anybody outside of the family would make a way for them to be brought in. No matter their family or their cultural history, the story of God's liberation was just as much and could be just as much their story as it was anyone else's. Then the Passover celebration served as a yearly remembership for God's people. God instructed in advance how this remembership celebration would take place. It was a story. He says, gather your people together. Make some bread that tastes really bad. Roast an animal over the fire. Don't forget the bitter herbs to remember your time of bitterness and hardship. And he says, tell the story. Tell the story. And as they do, his people would remember what he did. And then they would remember themselves to the family. Every year they were given an opportunity. And every year people were invited to opt in. Come on in. This is open membership. You are welcome here. This story can be yours. How beyond gracious is that? Not only does God protect and free his chosen people, but he invites others into that protection, into that freedom. And he does it in a rhythmic and a regular basis every year. It is not happenstance, not at all, that Jesus, just days before his death, sat around a table with his disciples and celebrated the last official Passover feast. Matthew 26, Mark 14, Luke 22, and John 13 all give account of what happened that night when Jesus fulfilled the old covenant and he initiated a new one. Because he became the lamb slaughtered, and his blood now marks the doorways of our souls. He is the bread of life. We don't need anything else. And by his wounds, a way was made for us, any of us who want to claim Jesus as Lord. Apostle Paul, in his letter to the Corinthians, invites them to remember Jesus' actions. And he instructs them, as often as you eat this bread and you drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death until he comes again. He's saying, do this often, because you're going to forget. Here at Bethany, on the first Sunday of every month, we gather at the table. And sometimes it feels regular. I'll admit it does for me too. I will be 31 in November, and I have been receiving communion a lot of my life. And so sometimes it's like, all right, bread, cup, eat, And I'm ashamed, because that's not what communion or celebrating at the table is about. It's a remembering event for us. Communion should be a remembering event for us. We need to remember. We get to remember what God has done for us, and we get to remember ourselves to God, and we get to invite the membership of God's people back to himself. You see, we remember Jesus, who died the final death of the firstborn so that we could be delivered. It's our story of redemption. We remember our former lives as slaves to the things that held us back, that kept us in bondage, and we remember our exodus. Maybe even recalling that exodus event as we participate in receiving the gifts of communion. As we do that, God brings us home. And we remember to the family of God. We renew our covenant with God, and we offer the opportunity for anyone to join in, to make an exodus from their old patterns of living, and to adopt a life patterned by God himself. Next week is the first Sunday of October, believe it or not, and we will come to the table for communion. And this will be a remembering event for us. And it could be a remembering event for people in your life who have never met the Jesus who sets people free. What if you gently, didn't drag them, gently brought people into the family of God by way of this experience, by way of this Exodus event, by way of this Passover event, by way of this communion event? These things are beautiful. And whenever we come to the table, we're invited to prepare. Just as God invited the Israelites to prepare for the actual event, cloak tucked into their belt, ready to go, shoes tied, maybe they were sandals, bread that would be wrapped and ready to go, God says, I need you, I want you, as you prepare to come to this table, to do some of the hard work. And the challenge of the hard work is that we are very quick to forget and to dismember. The opposite of remembering and remembering. We either go through the motions at this table and not really recalling God or his actions in our life, or you and I get so fixed on protecting the act that we don't let people come in. We forget who God is and what God is about and how we're to live in relation to him. And communion, the gift of this table, reminds and reconnects us. Because why did God initiate the Exodus to begin with? Because his people were oppressed and they were suffering and they cried out to God and God heard them. And he listened to them, and he responded to them. And he didn't say, there, there, it's okay. He said, move out, peeps, we're going. He acted with compassion, and he acted with judgment. And he made a way. He made a way for them to be free under his lordship, and he remembered them because they remembered him. You see, when we forget, we begin to disconnect from God and from God's community. To be obedient to our remembering allows for the remembering of ourselves and for the remembering of others. I wonder then, how do we remember, not only for ourselves, but for other people? You see, when someone is dismembered from the community, or we ourselves dismember ourselves from the community, our first response is to listen. To listen to what it is that caused that dismembering, and to then listen for the Exodus event in their life. Perhaps for you, as you tell your story, or perhaps if you are listening to the story of someone else as they recall their Exodus events, we pay attention to their suffering and pain. We pay attention to that moment of liberation. And when we do this, we participate with God in connecting their retrospective memory to their prospective memory. It isn't always as it was. It could be something different. Remember when I told you to remember that event for you, that thing? Your Exodus story. There are billions and billions of Exodus stories. Maybe trillions. And there are billions and trillions of Exodus events that God has used to remember you and me and us back to him. These stories, they deserve to be heard. They deserve to be listened to. They deserve a chance to change us. Because I can tell you, every time an Exodus event occurs, God's hand is there. And as we keep listening and remembering, we will come to discover that the God who exited millions of people from Egypt that day would do the exact same thing for you, for me. If he did it before, he'll do it again and again and again and again. So the invitation is this. Remember your God. Your God who brought you out of Egypt with a mighty hand, and remember yourself to God. A God who is always proven faithful, past, present, and future. And this is the story that we get to tell. This is the story we get to hear. And this is the story that we get to live. May it be so. Amen.